You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
In 1969, the United States made the decision to bomb Cambodia. The target was elements of the North Vietnamese Army, which had taken shelter there. For 14 months, bombs fell on a small area. Whether they fell on civilians or soldiers, no one knew exactly. But the end result was the destruction and destabilization of a previously peaceful country. Prothap Chatterjee wonders if the same thing may be happening for a second time, but this time in Pakistan. Again, the United States is trying to chase an enemy out of its sanctuary. Again, bombs are falling on both civilian and enemy combatants. Prothap Chatterjee is a freelance journalist and senior editor at Core Watch. He is also the author of Halliburton's Army, and he joins me by phone from Jordan. Hello, Prothap.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Now, I understand that parts of Pakistan are being targeted by the United States military. How serious are the attacks?
Well, the attacks have been taking place, I think, since for several years now, but they've really escalated in the last, literally in the last 15 months since Barack Obama took office. So, whereas there have been a number of strikes by the former president, George Bush, it's now literally, particularly in January, it was coming literally every other day compared to one every 6 months. And so where you had drone strikes these drone strikes go back to perhaps 2005 or so in Yemen, but now in Pakistan, this is the main way the U.S. is fighting the Taliban across the border, which is to drop bombs on them from 30,000 feet up, piloted by people in Nevada and Virginia, as opposed to a hot war where you have troops on the ground and that sort of thing.
And we're not really sure whether these bombs are hitting civilian or enemy combatants.
Well, a variety of information out there. Technically, the U.S. government has not admitted to bombing anyone, and if you ask anybody. I know a couple of people on the National Security Council, and when I ask them what exactly is happening in Pakistan, they say, well, nothing, you know, no comment. So there's no official number as to how many strikes are taking place, let alone how many people have been killed. There have, of course, been estimates, and if you listen to the estimates from the Hawks, in fact, everybody that's been killed has been a militant or a member of Al-Qaeda. There are, of course, ones at the other end of the spectrum where everybody's killed as a spectrum. So perhaps the best assessment maybe, I mean, at least the one in the middle, is one that comes from the New America Foundation. And their study, which actually came out a couple of weeks ago, says that roughly 32% of those killed in the drone attacks since 2004 were civilians. And so this report, which is called the Year of the Drone, studied 114 drone raids in which 1,200 people were killed. And based on the data that they got, I'm not sure exactly how they got it, but I presume mostly from media reports in Pakistan, between 549 and 849 were reliably reported to be militant fighters. So the rest, we assume, is civilians.
And what effect are these strikes having in Pakistan and on Pakistani public opinion?
Well, I think it's had a dramatic impact on Pakistani political opinion, especially when you take the country as a whole. And now, again, there's some dispute because the U.S. government will say that in these particular areas where the drones have struck, there is local support for it, they claim. And again, we don't really know because these are fairly remote parts of the country. This is, you know, North Waziristan, Balochistan, and places like that, where they are targeting people. And these are not places where you get to very easily. There are no foreign reporters. There are not very many Pakistani reporters even going in there and reporting. And when the Pakistani government has conducted military strikes, they don't take embedded journalists. So we don't really know exactly. However, having said that, even though supposedly, according to the U.S. military, there is support for these non-existent strikes, when polls have been taken of Pakistan at large, there's very little support for it. And in fact, what you, I think I find most interesting is the Pakistani Prime Minister, who's pro-US, Yusuf Raza Gilani, has spoken out publicly against the drone strikes. And he said, you know, we strongly condemn this attack, and the government will raise this issue at diplomatic levels. But, I mean, you have to understand that this is clearly not something that the U.S. government is doing without checking in with the Pakistani government. There are two or three, actually probably about four bases that the U.S. has been using since September 11, 2001. And one of them in particular, the Shamsi base, which is in Balochistan, has been apparently the major place from which these attacks have been launched. And so these are bases that were given to them by the Pakistani government. And so presumably, even though some of these are purely for logistics, such as fueling and that sort of thing, I imagine the Pakistani government is being notified of these strikes in advance. Just as in Cambodia in 1969, King Sihanouk was informed of what was going on, and he was given that there was a point at which, you know, the Americans arrived and said, "Look, we've got information here that proves that the Viet Cong are operating from Cambodia." And so, I imagine something very similar is happening today, where the U.S. government is saying, "We can help you. These are people who, in fact, are going to disrupt your country. Therefore, you know, you need to work with us. We'll do the bombing. You don't have to do anything, but you just have to give us a secret approval." I mean, here's the thing: the Pakistani government can kick them off the. It's clear these attacks are happening because the Pakistani Prime Minister himself is condemning it. If he didn't want to allow these to happen, he could cancel permission for these bases. But they have not done that, so I imagine that there is. Even though the highest levels of the Pakistani government is condemning it, and polls show something like 90% of Pakistani people are against it, there is certainly tacit approval.
Is the United States unaware of the anger which these attacks are generating among the Pakistani public?
No, actually, I think the U.S. government is quite aware of this for a couple of different reasons. One is the highest levels of the Pentagon commands have actually spoken about this. And David Petraeus, who's the head of CENTCOM, the U.S. Central Command, actually wrote in a secret assessment last May. And in this he says, anti-U.S. sentiment has already been increasing in Pakistan, especially in regard to cross-border and reported drone strikes, which Pakistanis perceive to cause unacceptable civilian casualties. And he says that his local polls show that 35% of Pakistanis say they do not support U.S. strikes into Pakistan, even if they are coordinated with the government of Pakistan ahead of time. So clearly they're aware of it, and they're putting this into their assessments, but they believe it's a risk worth taking. And the risk they believe that they will be able to, you know, kill the leadership and sow enough division between the local population there and the Al-Qaeda leadership or the Pakistani Taliban leadership, you know, to make that an inhospitable area for these groups. In reality, it could backfire, is in fact the point of the article that I wrote recently, because the Khmer Rouge, for example, if you go back in history, were actually a very marginal movement, much like the Taliban of today. Once again, a very fundamentalist regime and ideology which looked to, you know, bring everybody under their control and enforce these very strict rules and, you know, roll back history in some ways and modernization. And these people who didn't have support, very reluctant support, slowly started to build up basically a guerrilla army that grew in size as young people, you know, who are disenfranchised, without jobs, etc., joined their ranks. And it doesn't actually take a lot of people to take control of an area. I mean, the British control India with 1,250 civil servants. It's a huge country. And the Khmer Rouge, you know, had 4,000. But at one point, they controlled all of Cambodia and killed millions of people. So it doesn't take a lot to, you just need a few charismatic people, brutal people who could actually change the course of history.
You're in Jordan now, and you've traveled extensively through the Middle East and South Asia. What do ordinary people in Jordan and elsewhere in the region think about these American attacks in Pakistan, as well as recent events in Afghanistan, the recent offensive in Afghanistan?
Well, I think, I mean, in the Middle East, where I'm right now, in Jordan, for example, I don't think they're as concerned with Pakistan as such, because it's a little remote. I mean, they're perhaps more concerned with, let's say, things that happen in Iraq that are closer, and also Afghanistan, because it's so much in the news. I mean, the strikes in Pakistan aren't, you know, front page news here in the Middle East. So I don't know that that's a big issue here, but I do know that, let's say, in South Asia, in India and places like that, even though the Indians and the Pakistanis have had a very difficult relationship, and many Indians oppose sort of Muslim fundamentalism and that sort of thing, I still think the whole idea of a secret and covert war is something that, you know, goes down very badly in Afghanistan, in India, and everywhere else. So there's definitely a feeling that the U.S. just basically, you know, I mean, I've spent actually all of the last 6 months pretty much in the Middle East, and if you go talk to people, they always ask, if you say, you know, you live in the United States and you work there, you know, they want to know why the U.S. government has such heavy-handed policies, and, you know, why they're not able to understand, you know, the local culture and that sort of thing. So what's interesting, I think, is both, I was in Afghanistan actually in late 2001, and I've been going back fairly often since. I've been in Iraq four times, I've been in Afghanistan four times. And to me, what's interesting is in 2003 in Iraq, because I was there in 2003, and in Afghanistan in 2002, there was a lot of support for the United States, because people didn't like the Taliban, and people didn't like Saddam Hussein. And so a lot of people were happy that these sort of, you know, dictators and fundamentalist regimes had been ousted. And they looked, you know, particularly in Afghanistan, I was struck. I didn't expect that there'd be as much support. I thought people would be, you know, why is the U.S. bombing? But you have to understand that the 2001 invasion of Afghanistan was a fairly short campaign. There wasn't a great deal of bombing. Most cities were not attacked. You know, there weren't huge numbers of casualties. There was a lot of shock and awe, as the Bush administration put it. And so at that time, I think people look forward to the future. I mean, it's particularly in Afghanistan, we're talking about 20-plus years of war and no central government. So people looking forward to the idea of peace. And for the next 3 or 4 years, things were peaceful, but there was actually no reconstruction, no economic progress. I mean, yes, lots of Kabul was rebuilt, but for wealthy people, you know. The business conglomerates were created. The warlords started to make a lot of money. And when ordinary people, you know, got nothing out of it, they started to get, you know, more and more upset. And since there was no security, there was no police force, just as in Iraq, security started to deteriorate. And so people turned to militias. And this is where, you know, whether you talk about the Khmer Rouge in the late 1960s, or you talk about, you know, the Mahdi army in Basra, you talk about the Taliban in Helmand province, a lot of times people accept fundamentalist groups when they bring security. And so, I don't know if this is surprising, but the Taliban or the Mahdi army or the Khmer Rouge actually reduced immediate violence. The people, they knew that they couldn't speak out and they couldn't do what they wanted. But at the same time, there was more security in the sense there wasn't, you know, unpredictable violence. That there were horrible massacres or beheadings is true, but if you stayed out of trouble, you were okay. And people would rather a dictator sometimes than complete chaos.
Well, thanks very much for updating us on the situation in Pakistan and elsewhere, Prothap.
You're very welcome.
I've been talking with Prothap Chatterjee. He is a freelance journalist and senior editor at Core Watch. He is also the author of Halliburton's Army, published by Nation Books.